Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, the RTE Rugby Podcast. I'm Michael Corcoran. Today we're having a look back at last weekend's Guinness Pro 12 action. We're looking ahead to the opening round of European Rugby, and we hear from an Australian who's returning home to take up a Super Rugby post. Was billed by competition organisers as the big weekend. Round 6 of the Guinness Pro 12 saw a record 45 tries, 9 bonus points earned, over 70,000 fans, almost 50,000 of them, watched Connacht against Ulster and Leinster against Munster.
Leinster on the ground, Munster trying to come forward with that one, the referee asking them to shunt it on. They've moved it once. CJ standing with the ball in hand. Ronan O'Mahony there as well. Niall Scanlon inside there. And Munster putting pressure on here now as they drive Leinster back and go for the line. And this is far side of the pitch here. David Wilkinson completely unsighted. I mean, he saw exactly the angle in which they were coming in on and chose the wrong side. That's the reality. He's got a touch judge over there to help him out. And he was completely on the wrong side to see what was happening. 25 and a half minutes gone. He's going to go for the television match official, Simon McDowell. And well, the question is there any reason why it cannot award the try? And they feel that Victor's pal, Peter O'Mahony, is the man who's grounded. Well, the try has been awarded, and Peter O'Mahony, well, playing a captain's part. And again, it's at the feet there of Jamie Heaslip. And McGrath looks to take control of it now, and he looks to go on a sniping run, sweeps it out to Issa Latewa, and he scored a try on the near side of the pitch. And I tell you what, that was a long time coming. Taken by Luke McGrath, moves it out there. Opportunity for Gary Ringrose. Chases inside the 22. Gary Ringrose now eventually hauled onto the ground. Leinster have it. They have numbers as well. Back with Jamie Heaslip. Good work there by the Leinster number 8. Available for Luke McGrath. Sweeps it back in field. And Conor Murray comes charging out of the defensive line there. Prevent Leinster from coming forward. But Leinster have momentum here now. Available as it's swept outside. Across. Oh, that's a massive forward pass. Across on the far side of the pitch. Touchdown, but I certainly wouldn't expect that try to be given at all. The referee has given it across in that far side of the pitch, and that was a forward pass by at least three, four, if not 5 yards. And Leinster have it now back there and kicked forward by Robbie Henshaw. And Ronan O'Mahony has to go chasing back after this one. Ronan, he's lost control of it, and Leinster look as if they have got in for a try. May very well be Rory O'Loughlin who's actually got in and touched it down. The referee, with probably two decisive blasts of the whistle this afternoon, is now going to the television match official. Let's hear what the question is.
I thought it was knocked back by Red and then grounded by
just want to check if Red touched it down first.
Okay. No touchdown there. Knocked on by Red.
We're just going to look at the reverse angle.
It looks actually as if it's Jemison Gibson Park, who may very well have got the touchdown. There was a series of knock-ons, but I think Jemison Gibson Park, the scrum half, was pretty nippy getting in there. You wonder if he get the ball down on the line as he reached out.
You'd have to give that try, to be honest, you know. I mean, like, it was a scrag.
We need to see it from the other angle.
It's a try for Gibson.
Can I have it in real time, please? Rather than throw it in real time.
We're going to have a look at it here.
Yeah, try.
Ronan O'Mahony there reaching out to try and get it, one under pressure there from Robbie Henshaw, who I had thought had got it.
No, they're looking to see, did he knock it forward, Henshaw? He didn't. He doesn't touch the ball here. The knock-on is by Blaendahl.
No, but they're wondering, did Ronan O'Mahony touch it down for a 22-metre drop-up? If you have a look,
no.
So there's no control there.
There's no pressure on the ball. Yeah. He's knocked it back. How do you see it, Victor?
Yeah, there's no downward movement by the Munster player, and, you know, then obviously knock-on after that. You know, it's a sideways.
It's no pressure.
No pressure.
Yeah, there's a big sort of committee meeting inside the 22.
Simon, listen, I'm happy. I'm happy that that ball is not grounded. He knocks it back, so I'm going to award it.
It's a try.
I agree.
Thank you.
So the try has been awarded.
It's very tough, very physical. I suppose we're delighted to come out on the other side of it, but I think everyone knows the side is it was scrappy, and I think the stuff we can improve on going into a huge 2 weeks for the club.
In terms of the way the first half went in this match, I mean, there was swings and roundabouts. You started off pretty well, but you found yourselves behind.
Yeah, I think we started well. We probably gave him access a little bit into the game. We gave him a scrum penalty, then a penalty from in the side, which I gave up. It probably gave him access in. They scored a try off it. So it's those little bits, the small margins that let teams into games. And I suppose it's something we can improve on going forward.
What was the key message at halftime?
Stick at it. I think we were having the ball. We had ball in good areas. We just probably weren't converted as much as we would have liked. So just stick at it and hoping that the game would open up a small bit towards tail end when a bench could make an impact.
You were certainly under the pump for periods in the second half. I mean, you held them up quite well, probably just.
Yeah, I think our defence held up pretty well. We're making good hits, and look, they're a very good team. They're very physical, they're very abrasive, and they come hard at you around the corner. So overall, I think we held up pretty well. Probably disappointing to let them in there the last try they got. But I think there's a lot we can work towards going into the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, what a great weekend it was with those two Irish local derbies. The former Ireland and Leinster back row, Aidan McCullen, joins me here to have a chat about those and indeed have a look towards Europe as well. Hi, Aidan, how are you?
Yeah, good to be here, Mick.
Listen, can we talk about the Connacht Ulster game initially? There was an intensity there at the sports ground on Friday in Connacht's play that perhaps has been kind of missing all season so far.
Yeah, it's kind of like they've woken up. It's taken a bit of time. The way they play is just great to see in Irish rugby. I just think it's going to have this halo effect across Irish rugby over time, because like we see in Henshaw coming to Leinster, that was the initial plan with Connacht, and I don't want to be taken away from them, but that was the initial plan, that you'd kind of be an academy for the rest of the country. Pat Lamb's not letting that happen, of course.
He's
building it like a fortress down there. And what I love about the way they play, and it's why they won last year, is it's the mentality, it's the leadership. And I think that's it's a problem not only in rugby, but it's a problem in Ireland in general. I think in business, etc. That leadership mentality is absolutely essential to win. And it's something that's fizzled out in the last 10 years, I think.
When you look back at the game the previous week, it's now two wins in a row for them. But when Niyaya Diallokan scored the try against Edinburgh 2 weeks ago, you could see there was confidence returning to the players. There was a buzz in the crowd. I mean, that was reflected right from kickoff last Friday night against Ulster.
Yeah, they came out of the blocks playing that kind of way. And you know, they are playing, probably, you could argue they're probably running a little bit too much, taking too many risks. But that eventually, when that becomes your culture of how you play, then it's okay, but it takes a little while to get there. And it's a real brave thing for Pat Lamb, I think, to actually just go, okay, I know this is a risk. I know it'd probably be easy to kick the corners, try and win the lineup with Delan or whatever, and then go through our plays, but we're going to back the players here. And it's why they won last year. This is why they won the league. And, you know, it's so essential to have the backing of the coach there, to have the bravery of the coach. And this is what I'm talking about, this leadership, to actually kind of go, okay, I know I'm going to get stick for not taking the points when they're on or running it or backing the players to do so, but it's going to pay off in the long run. And that's what I feel with Pat Lamb, that it's a long-term strategy with this.
When you look at Ulster, you know, the team that that Les Kiss selected for that game, there was no Charles Piotto, no Franco van der Merwe, Ruan Pienaar wasn't playing either. But even in his wildest dreams, I'm not sure he would have thought, A, losing, or B, losing and conceding a four-try bonus point to the opposition. That wouldn't have been on his agenda, would it?
Absolutely, yeah. No, it was a real under-the-radar one. And that's, I think we're going to see that more and more from Connacht. And hopefully, you know, when we look at Europe, we're going to see that with the Toulouse game. You know, they might come under the radar again, because it's a great place to be coming from. And it's almost like Europe won't have been aware of the victories of Connacht or how they played last year. They will have heard, oh, these guys aren't bad. But they won't have done their analysis. They won't hopefully have paid them that much respect. And I know that sounds mad, but that's the way it is a little bit. And players certainly, it's not on their radar. And that's exactly the best place for Connacht to come from.
Now, in terms of the game on Saturday, it was a slight contrast. Maybe perhaps the intensity wasn't there. The crowd was gigantic, over 40,000 people at the Aviva Stadium. I read somewhere last week, somebody said, you know, this match really doesn't have the sort of attraction of before. 40,000 people voted with their feet in their pockets to come in. What were your impressions of it?
Yeah, no, it's always a great build game. You know, it's great to see that kind of atmosphere and that type of enthusiasm from the crowd. That's what we need. We need that, because if that fizzles away, it eventually affects the game. It's just how it goes. But I thought it was an okay game. I'm not going to lie. I didn't think it was an amazing game. I think there's been better games from both sides. I think Leinster were happy to win. I think they probably left a lot behind, as in they didn't play amazingly well. It was great to get the victory, good for confidence, etc. But it wasn't. It was a good bit away from perfect. But I do think, you know, John Fogarty, Girvan Dempsey, these guys are the type of players that are the type of backroom staff that Leinster need, along with Leo, where they're and Stuart Lancaster. They're paying attention to those things, where skills, you have your defence, your scrum. these type of players, as players when they were playing, they were never complacent. They always worked really, really hard. There were the guys out after training doing extra work, and that they will pay that forward into the team now, and they'll expect that from players, and that has a massive effect on the team. And I think that leadership and bringing back Issa, that has a massive effect, because I think they lost that little bit of an edge of older players that older players bring, but the right older players, the players who worked hard, the players that paid attention to detail. And I think in a way, it's something that Munster's lacking a little bit, the old heads, because the old heads have a massive benefit.
Well, they've got a massively young squad. That's the problem,
like,
for them, isn't it?
You're rebuilding, like Munster, like, and people kind of said, oh, you know, we weren't great, Munster, we didn't play well. And kind of going, that's okay. Every team goes through a trough like that, and you can't always have an academy going to fill in the gaps everywhere. You're going to have to bring some players along, and it's a case of timing, and you need to have the pockets to be able to plug the gaps with bringing in foreign players. That's what you need to do. And it's just not there for Munster at the moment. It's going to be not there for a while. I think we're going to see, you know, disappointment from Munster a little bit over the season as they grow into the team, into leadership positions again.
And of course, you're in a situation there with Jacques Nee, Narber, Razi Erasmus. It's a new coaching staff there as well. What is constant and consistent there is Anthony Foley. I suppose one thing that Leinster will have learned over the weekend is the Munster Mall is back, and maybe that's an area that caused Leinster a bit of difficulty.
Yeah, and that's one thing you can really control when you have a young side. You can actually be brilliant at those things. You can be brilliant at a mall, because open play is a bit more, the team needs to gel and everybody needs to be a certain way. But malls and stuff like that are... It's not just about bulk, it's about your brain as well. It's about how you run that mall. It's about your efficiency, about how you get the player down to the ground, how people fill in the gaps, etc. And they're the things that we're seeing from Munster. They're the things that are doing really well. It's probably a little bit of leadership on the pitch. I mean, like Johnny Sexton now, I think he's really coming back to himself of leading the game and actually being the orchestrator, being that conductor of the orchestra that we like to see from a number 10. Munster don't have that yet, and that'll take time, and that comes from his experience being abroad, etc. That comes from all those things, as well as being the age he is now and the experience he has now. It's a holistic thing, and that's what we're seeing. That's what the difference in the size is at the moment. You know, it's not just about skills, it's about experience, leadership, knowing how to play out games, how to play certain situations, etc.
In terms of the four teams, in terms of the two games over the course of the weekend, it was almost like ideal preparation, wasn't it? Because, you know, for Europe this coming weekend.
Yeah, and I think Munster losing is probably the best preparation they can have, because that's going to be a very, very hard game. Against Racing and you know, Leinster, I think it's the opposite. It's actually like they needed a little bit of confidence to go, our game plan's working, these things are coming together, probably around 65-70%, but we're getting there, and it's a good place to be coming in from them. But I think Munster needed to be almost coming from the place of being cornered and actually, you know, coming in under the radar into this game. It's a different kind of thing, because if there could have been a bit of complacency there had they beaten Leinster.
We'll be chatting to continue the chat with Aidan and indeed Gavin Mortimer from Paris in a while. We'll be looking ahead towards the European games, and we'll be chatting to or hearing from people within the camps. But it was announced during the course of last week. Sean Byrne, you're aware of Sean Byrne?
Yeah,
big move from him, isn't it?
Big move, great move, and he deserves it. I think it's great when you have players who are as skilled and knowledgeable, but paying it back and, you know, being back involved in the game, so important. He kind of reminded me of Al Gaffney when he first came to Leinster. Al was essential to Leinster's rise because he instilled this idea of skills and the importance of skills. And I remember people like Gervin Dempsey staying back and doing extra training, and that all raised the whole team to actually be, there was a culture of staying back and doing extra skills before training, being there early, doing extra skills. And that wasn't there then. This is back 10, 15 years ago. That wasn't there. It was, you came, you did your training, you left. And I think Sean Byrne, you know, the benefit of having him involved for Leinster was huge. And him going off to bigger things is a great move. It was always going to happen.
Yeah, a very, very talented man who also played with Bath and the Waratahs. He's the older brother of the former Leinster centre, Michael Byrne, who was there for a period of time as well.
Sean finished his playing career with Old Belvedere in the Ulster Bank League, and for the last number of seasons he's been involved in the Leinster Academy. Well, he's packing his bags, literally as we speak, to return to Australia to take up a position with the Super Rugby side Western Force.
I'm actually in the kitchen of Sean Byrne's house for the time being. Sean, it's fair to say, a former Leinster player and now a former Leinster coach. And like many people before you, you're leaving Ireland to go to Australia, but you have a different reason.
Yeah, a good opportunity for myself over in Perth at the Western Force to step up and become a senior assistant coach of a Super Rugby team was too good an opportunity to pass up, along with the weather.
And how did all of that come about? Not the weather, but the opportunity?
You know, I think some people in Australian rugby have put my name forward. Someone like Michael Checker has probably been a part of that. Obviously, Checker's been a part of my career while I was playing, and I got an opportunity to interview for a role and somehow landed it.
Quite an exciting time for you, but for some people, you know, you were playing for Leinster for a while and then they may have felt that you kind of disappeared off the radar because they hadn't seen you.
Yeah, look, it was frustrating for me when I arrived at Leinster is that my body was starting to let me down a little bit, and I couldn't do what I'd probably done earlier in my career, which was score, you know, 3 or 4 tries a game. Nah, only joking. My body was starting to break down. So the second season I was at Leinster, I think I played 6 games all year, had 2 Achilles heel operations. And when you're 33 years old and 2 Achilles heel operations, that'll end your career pretty quickly. So thankfully I got back playing, but it was at a lower level at club rugby over in Italy before then returning to Ireland to get involved in coaching in rugby.
And I know that you played in the All-Ireland League as well for Old Belvedere for a period.
Yeah, and I was unlucky there as well, off the back of Jack Conan there. We almost won the All-Ireland, I think it was 2013. Yeah. And Clontarf ended up winning it, pipping us on the post the final day. We lost to Gary Owen in a game we were hoping to win. If we won that, we would have won the title. So it's a sad finish for me, but a lot of great memories of rugby.
And I know that you've been heavily involved in coaching at various levels, schools, and obviously with the Leinster Academy in the last one.
Yeah, no, I've been down at Mary's school there in Rathmines. Were great. They gave me an opportunity to coach their senior cup team straight out of retirement. And then also, yeah, Old Belvedere, the club, you know, was somewhere I played at, and I got involved in a little bit of coaching there before moving over to a local club here, Coolmine Rugby. Mm. So a Leinster junior club, and, you know, grounded myself there before going into the Leinster Academy.
And speaking of the Leinster Academy, I mean, it seems as if there's a massive conveyor belt of talent coming through, and we've seen that with some of the younger players. I mean, even the last couple of years, people like Gary Ringrose, even Rory O'Loughlin this season.
Yeah, like there is that pathway there, and Leinster are great at trying to bring those guys through. You'd hope that would never stop, the young locals coming through. You might always get the odd international player coming from overseas to add a bit of experience and help those guys progress. But ultimately, here at Leinster, we want our young guys to come through and form the base of the squad.
So it's Perth, Western Force. I mean, that's an entirely huge challenge, isn't it? I mean, it's a massive step up.
It is, yeah. Look, Western Force haven't done great the last few years, results-wise, in the Super Rugby. So there's a chance there to try to go and help them improve and be part of a new coaching regime there. So looking forward to it.
And what do you know of them now? I assume you had to cram an awful lot in terms of preparation for match interviews.
Yeah, look, I'm starting out, so I've got to get to know the playing squad. I know a few of their guys already. I played with Matt Hodgson, their captain, back at the Waratahs many years ago. So Matt's been around a long time, but there's other guys there I need to get to know alongside the other coaches. So.
And in terms of the coaching staff, I mean, it's you know, Ulster losing Joe Barakat as well, who's taking up a position there, and Alan Gaffney, who'd be known to a lot of people here in this country, will be involved.
Yeah, Joe's got a lot of experience himself, and as we know, Alan Gaffney's got a lot of experience, so I'll try to learn off those guys. The head coach there, Dave Vessels, is a young guy himself, was never a player, but has been coaching for quite a while, but still young in age, and you know, no one ever stops learning, do they? So probably even Alan Gaffney, maybe I can teach him a thing or two.
You probably can. In terms of your future, I mean, do you see your future in coaching back in Australia now at this stage? Have we seen the last of you, so to speak?
Look, I'd hope not, and that's the way I framed it to the Irish Rugby Union, Colin McEntee there, the head of high performance. I said, look, I'm going to go away and upskill and try to make myself a better coach, and you know, in the rugby world, you can never say never. So, you know, it would be great, I think, if I could return as a better upskilled senior coach to get involved with Irish rugby again at some point. It'd be great.
And where do you see that Irish rugby is at this stage? You know, I mean, obviously you've been involved in the academy, you know what's happening at schools level, you know, whatever, some involvement and everything with the under-20s all the way through to A teams and upwards.
Yeah, look, I think it's in a good place. It's obviously hard at the top end competing against some of the French clubs and the English clubs with bigger budgets. That's private investors in pumping in a lot of money to their rugby clubs. But I don't know if that's sustainable, and if one of those rich guys pulls his money out of that club, it falls apart. Your man at Toulon there, it looks like he's about to do that in the next few years or sell the place. So what Irish rugby has at the moment is probably more sustainable in terms of bringing through the young players and looking after the grassroots of rugby. At Leinster, they say from the ground up, and that's sustainable as opposed to just pumping in lots of money at the top end.
Logistically, it's a bit of a journey, isn't it, to head back to Perth? It's not as if we're sitting on boxes. We're not. We're in your lovely kitchen at the moment, but there's a bit of a scramble to get everything packed to get out of here.
Yeah, no, we've got to pack up. We've got removalists coming tomorrow, so always got time for yourself though, Michael, so I've put the packing on hold for just now, but the minute you leave, I'll be packing boxes again.
And tell me, before we finish up, I mean, is there something you're going to miss about it? Well, you're not going to miss the weather, but is there something you're going to miss about here?
Look, it's the people. I know, I've said that. I've played in England, in Italy, and in Australia, and what makes this place great, this country and places like Leinster, is the people, the backroom staff and the players themselves. It is just the people, all the fans. You meet so many great people that you can't help but warm to this place.
So you'll be Australia and Western Force, but I guess you'll be keeping an eye on what's happening in this part of the world still.
Ah, for sure. With especially with things like social media these days, it's so easy to stay in touch with what's going on in a place and who's doing well and who's not. So for sure, I'll be following the results.
So this weekend sees the start of another European adventure for all of the clubs involved. Certainly, they will all hope to make it to the final next season. It looks very much, from an opening weekend point of view, as if it's Ireland versus France who are going to dominate certainly the headlines over the course of the weekend. Aidan McCullen is still here with me, and we're joined from Paris by Gavin Mortimer. Hiya, Gavin.
Hello. How are you, Michael?
I'm very well, thanks. Is there a big appetite in France this weekend ahead of Europe?
There is among some teams. The European Cup has certainly decreased in attractiveness and importance in the last couple of seasons over in France, and certainly, I mean, only yesterday Christophe Urius, the Castres coach, was saying, yeah, we're going to give it a crack against Leinster and Northampton, and then we'll see how we get on, but our main priorities are top 14. So it certainly hasn't got the importance that it has in Ireland and the UK.
And certainly for some of the clubs, I mean, you know, Europe is a big thing, but for others it's kind of almost a rotation stroke resting period, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's the case for Castres. Toulouse too. It's sad to see how Toulouse struggles. It's 2010 since the last of their four titles. 3 years since they've got out of the group stage, and they've got a tricky match against Connacht. So yeah, it's very much about rotation and one eye always on the top 14.
Can we specifically look at the game between Leinster and Castres? I know that certainly Leinster will be quite pleased that the sort of initial game is at home.
Yeah, absolutely. And Castres have lost their last couple of matches, and they suffered a defeat against Montpellier on Saturday that really they should have won. They dominated the second half, but made a lot of unforced errors. And it's a strange period for Castres, because their last time they were in Europe in the Champions Cup 2 seasons ago, they lost all 6 of their group matches. And I think they're going to struggle against Leinster.
They're one of those nuggety teams, though, aren't they? They're kind of hard to get rid of, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, they're sort of personified by scrum half Rory Cockott, who, as you said, is sort of a nuggety player, and he's always chirping away at officials in the opposition, but he's a good player too, and he's the heart of their team. And they're not easy to beat, that's right, and they are definitely going to be up for it against Leinster, and they've got a big forward pack, and that's what caused Montpellier problems on Saturday. You know, they've got some big men up front, so it's not going to be easy for Leinster, but if they just play a tight game and don't let themselves get dragged into an arm wrestle, then I think they'll win.
Aidan, you know, given the fact that Leinster with a big boost because of that victory over Munster last weekend, I mean, they would certainly fancy their chances in this one. I know coaches will give you the whole thing of one game at a time. It's Montpellier in 2 weeks' time, but I mean, this is kind of ideal, isn't it, in terms of the opening two matches for Leinster?
Absolutely, and it's obviously be an easier game than the Munster game, and Cass won't send a good team. But the strange thing is, it's gone back to how it used to be in France, where they just effectively throw these away games. The Cast game, you know, like if you let them in, it's kind of like the first round in a World Cup. If you're playing one of the third world countries in the World Cup and you let them in and they're in the game 40, 50, 60 minutes in the game, you're in trouble because they can sniff, actually, we could come away with something. And that's the mindset. It's we could actually come away with something here when they hadn't even come with that mindset at all. And it's Leinster's to lose rather than Cast to win.
I know, Gavin, that you're on kind of still on friendly terms with Stuart Lancaster. I mean, he's made a huge difference.
He has, yeah. No, he's me and Stuart played together at a few years ago at Scottish Exiles under 21 levels. And while I don't think he was the right man for England, I think he's found his niche at Leinster, and I think that it's a good appointment. And he's going to turn them into a European force once again. I think it's interesting, just going back to what Aidan was saying, I think that's very true with the French teams. It'll be very true with Castres. If Leinster get off to a good start, get an early score, then I expect the Castres heads to drop down. It's going to be a long 18 minutes for them.
OK, we'll leave that there for a second, and we can now hear the thoughts of the Leinster coach, Leo Cullen.
Yeah, our guys are very excited about kicking off another European campaign. Hugely frustrated, I suppose, the way last year went. So keen to get back up and running again. Very tough pool again, but you know, it's been well documented how tough all the pools are, and you can just see the amount of resources that are being pumped into clubs around Europe, England and France in particular. And yeah, it's going to be another very tough pool, but yeah, we're really excited to get going again.
And you've got two French teams in your pool. People say French teams don't travel well, but I think that's a myth from years ago.
Yeah, definitely. Well, certainly with Montpellier, so they've a very foreign flavours, particularly South African influence in their team, so they're comfortable travelling. So, yeah, Montpellier, very strong team. A lot of people might not know a huge amount about them, but like since Jake White has come in, you know, who's a proven winner himself, you know, won a World Cup as a coach with South Africa. Yeah, so he's a huge amount of experience. You know, they recruited very strongly over the last couple of years as well, so they have a very strong squad. Cast, again, like they're a team that we've played a good bit in Europe over the years, so we have encountered them in recent seasons. They've sort of been up and down in terms of form. Obviously, they won a top 14 with the coaches that went on to with Racing to win the top 14 as well. And then they had a bit of a sort of transition period, but since Christophe Aurier has come on in there, you know, they're making really good progress again. And you can see, like a couple of games I've watched them this year, their sort of work rate and desire to play for each other, I think, is very evident. So another really tough challenge with them.
I would say in most of the games that I've seen you play against them over the years, they're one of those teams that are pretty nuggety, pretty hard to shake off and get rid of, regardless of where you play them.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, like first up, having them at home, like it's they're in good form. They're sitting in a good position in top 14 at the moment. So, yeah, no, it's a tough challenge for us.
That was Leo Cullen there, looking ahead to the game on Saturday, which is our commentary match in RT Radio 1 between Leinster and Cast. If there is a good time, Gavin, for Connacht to take on Toulouse, is this it?
I don't know. There's been some rather negative sound bites coming out of Toulouse this week. Fabien Pelous, their great second row of the 1990s and the last decade, has been saying, you know, we're a small team now in Europe, and we're no one rates us as favourites, and that suits us. And yet I watched the game against Clermont on Sunday, and they destroyed the Clermont pack. And this was a Toulouse pack missing Richie Gray, Johan Maestri, Thierry Duchotois. Census Johnson was quite phenomenal, and he saw off three of the Clermont props. And their real problem is their goal kicker. It's they couldn't hit a barn door from six paces at the moment. And if they can, they will certainly look just, it's not going to be pretty, they'll look just to crush Connor up front. And I think they've got some very experienced players in there, and they're certainly not the Toulouse of old. Of course, what happened 3 years ago when they lost to Connaught down at in Toulouse will be on their minds. So I think it's going to be a tough afternoon for Connaught.
I mean, Toulouse certainly will see this as an extremely winnable game, won't they?
They will see it as a winnable game. It will be tricky going to Connaught, but I think that they'll still, the French still have a rather, they don't catch up with what's going on so much over the other side of the channel. So they still think of Leinster and Munster as the real powerhouses, and perhaps won't quite understand that Connaught, the improvements they've made despite that win 3 years ago, but how much even since then Connaught have improved. So but when you look across their back line, they've got Luke McAllister, Toby Flood, Florian Fritz, Jan David, Uge on the wing. I mean, they've got quality everywhere, and it's a mystery how they have been struggling for the last few months.
Aidan, do you see Connacht almost going in under the radar here, if you like? Because I'm just judging from what Gavin is saying there. I mean, certainly Toulouse will fancy their chances there, but that's ideal in terms of Pat Lam's team talk this week.
Absolutely. I think the way you beat Toulouse is playing the way they used to play anyway. And I remember Leinster coming and not... Because teams come to Toulouse and they've already lost the game in their head. That's the Toulouse of old. That's what they had. That was the fortress that Toulouse was, whether away or home. And the thing that Connacht have is the way they're playing now. They're probably playing some of the best rugby in Ireland, certainly, and they're playing the closest to the All Blacks of a club side Ireland has ever produced as an interprovincial side. And that is the way to beat Toulouse. It's to go through them, not around them, not kicking for corners, not safe. It's to play them at their old game, or the game they used to play. And that is the only way to beat them. And I do think this is a banana skin for Toulouse. I think Toulouse won't, as Gavin said, they won't have done their homework as much. They kind of go, these guys aren't bad, you know. That would be the kind of mindset. They don't know they're going to the sports ground. They don't know what a melting pot that is. They did play that a couple of years ago, but it was on the back of having been beaten in Toulouse, and they were with a different mindset. And they would have had done their homework because they played in the game previous. This is an under the radar, as you say, Michael. And I think the way... I actually went back in Connacht on this. I think Connacht can go, and if they play the way Pat Lam has incited them to play, I just think the guys will play the game that they've been trained to play, ultimately the land. They'll all raise their game because it's Toulouse. And I think we're in for a scorching game.
Well, 5:30 on Saturday evening in the dark. A typical West of Ireland day, Gavin, means sort of four seasons in the first 20 minutes of the match.
That will suit Toulouse.
it certainly will. But I tell you, before we move off this game, can we just hear from the Connacht coach, Pat Lam?
We're just excited to be here, you know, and particularly on the own bet of, you know, first time we qualified by on our own merit. And we're all excited to be, you know, involved in Champions Cup rugby and looking forward to it, and no bigger game than Toulouse at home.
Certainly concentrates the mind when you see one of the aristocrats of European rugby coming to take you on your own back garden.
Yeah, it is. And we've been watching, keeping an eye, the coach has been keeping an eye on their forms getting bigger and better. And they had a strong one on the weekend. But, you know, it's been great for Galway and Connacht and the West of Ireland to have those, you know, the big team like that coming across. And we are, you know, we understand the challenge that we face, but we're looking forward to it.
Is it a different challenge now, given the fact that the one last year was to qualify on your own merits?
Yeah.
You're there now, but you've got to compete as well.
Yeah, well, this is it. This is why we are excited, because it is not about qualifying or anything like that now. You know, we're there. Starts off round one, and we want to start well and home game. And so, you know, we've seen in this competition, it's a tough one. Watching from outside, you have to start well. Otherwise, it becomes very difficult.
And even getting out of the group, it would be an achievement in itself, you know, given the fact that it's a condensed, obviously, competition. At this stage, the groups are pretty competitive.
Well, there's no doubt, you know. You know, we talk about last year, you know, no Irish team got through. So it's a great goal for us to be try and be one of the Irish teams to try and make it through to the playoffs. But, you know, we don't underestimate the challenge to do that and what we face. And, you know, when we played Toulouse a few years ago, and we, you know, it was all talked about the difference in budget and squads and stuff, nothing's changed. And so it'll be another great achievement if we can knock them over.
I know you're a good man for concentrating on what you have rather than what you don't have. And I mean, that's been your strength.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, we go out there and we do our homework. We look at what their strengths are and what they can do. And you know, we'll put together a good plan, and if we execute and focus on that during the week, we've got a great chance.
So that's the Connacht coach, Pat Lam, there ahead of their game against Toulouse at the weekend. Ian Madigan used to be a Leinster player. Maybe in the future he'll be a Leinster player. But on Sunday for Bordeaux Begley's opening game against Ulster, it's a lot of people here, Gavin, are talking about the possibility of Ian Madigan versus Paddy Jackson.
Yeah, and there's been some interesting quotes from Ian Madigan this week. He was he went on to a local French radio station yesterday and was impressed and was speaking in French. He's really impressed the French, actually, in the way that he's a bit like Johnny Wilkinson, but he's really thrown himself into the lifestyle, the culture, in contrast to Johnny Sexton. And he was saying that so far he's been at 80% in his first half a dozen games, but he wants to be at 100% for Ulster, and he's you know, it's taken him a little bit of time to adapt to the Bordeaux style, but he's much more comfortable now. And he's, you know, he's scored 79 points already this season, and he's really proved to be a reliable goal kicker, which is not often the case for in French teams. And no, I think he's really impressed everyone, and I think he's going to be, obviously he'll bring some insight and some information to Bordeaux, and but he's going to be pivotal for them on Sunday.
I know that he's rotating with Lionel Boxies. It does appear already as if he's learned a lot and has settled in, as you say, quite rightly there.
Yeah, he has. And, you know, of course, it's helped with the fact that you've got Rafael Ibanez as head coach, you've got Joe Worsley, defence coach. These are guys who are, you know, we'll be able to help him out. And Bordeaux, the other thing that Madigan's been saying is the fans. You know, you get regularly get over 20,000 to Bordeaux games. They're actually the best attended club in the top 14.
Yeah.
That's right. And there's a funny quote from him yesterday on the radio. He said, you know, it's amazing the support we get at Bordeaux. They're there an hour before the game. They're there an hour and after the game. Whereas in Ireland, 5 minutes after the game, everyone's in the pub. So I think he's sort of enjoying the sort of the different culture, and it's wonderful just to see how well he has adapted to it.
Aidan, in terms of that, I mean, Gavin is making a good point. Obviously, you know, Ian Madigan brings the sort of the inside track really on Ulster, but Ulster, you know, I mean, this is an Ulster team that are vastly improved this year, and I mean, and Charles Pieto must have one of the best players in Europe at this stage.
Yeah, and just to correct you, Gavin, it's actually 3 minutes after the game. It's not 5 minutes that the pub is full. But Ulster have come on so much, but the beauty is, you know, we talked about the Toulouse looking at Connacht and kind of going, not doing their homework so much on it, perhaps. But Madigan will have actually been the inside man, been watching the Irish game, because that's what happens. You go abroad, you become more patriotic, you start getting more involved in your own country. But the first thing you do is you go and get your satellite channels sorted so you can watch the game back home, because you actually watch from a different lens, and you start looking at the game differently. You start analysing differently. He will be looking at his opposition numbers as well. He'll be focusing on that, and he'll be analysing the games much more than he would if he'd been in Leinster, and that's a huge benefit for Begley Bordeaux. And we're going to see a really interesting battle there, because the thing I always found with Madigan was he just needed to be backed. And if he can get that place and be the titulaire, as they call them in France, the first choice, number 10, ahead of Boxies, he will come into his own. I just think that's all he's lacking. He just needs to be backed, because you see some players from a young age just getting backed and the coach going, he's going to be our 10 for the next 10 years, like O'Gara, for example, like Johnny is now. That's what he needs, and he needs that on foreign soil to almost prove himself to be able to come back as a different player. And it's going to be a great battle there.
Gavin, it kind of gives me the impression, when you look at Madigan, it's one of those things where it's like as if you're sort of your cousins are coming to visit you, and you want to put on your best performance. And I think that will have to be his attitude this weekend.
Yeah, I think so. You know more than me that about the reasons why he left Ireland, but certainly when he came to France, he said that he wanted to prove a few things to a few people, and he's got an ideal opportunity now, and so I think he is going to be extra motivated. One other thing just to say, actually, about Bordeaux and where Ulster will look to capitalise is that they've got one of the worst disciplinary records in the top 14 this season. They very nearly threw away Saturday's victory against Brive by having two men yellow carded in the last 10 minutes, and they've had eight yellow cards this season, one red card. So I think that's something that Ulster will be aware of, and that Bordeaux will have to be aware of, because, yes, Madigan is very good at kicking 3 points, but Paddy Jackson's not too bad either.
All right, let's hear from the Ulster co-captain, Andrew Trimble.
I think every year it does get tougher and tougher. I think that's a good reflection of the tournament itself as well. It's a good reflection of the Pro 12, from our point of view anyway. The amount of competition there that there is there, the amount of teams there performing well, banging on the door a little bit anyway to get into knockout stages. But yeah, this year, yeah, we've certainly got our work cut out for us. Bordeaux, Exeter and Claremont. It's going to be a big ask, but it always is, as you say. And this year is no different. So you got to win your home games. You got to go on the road and pick up a win, the odd bonus point, see what happens, you know. But there's a few tough places to go. So, I mean, the underlying thing is, year after year, you got to be playing out of your skin to make a dent in Europe. So hopefully we can perform well enough to make that happen.
And these are test match intensity, aren't they? That's how high up the standard is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's actually, I mean, the way the season falls, you know, the right before you go into November. So, and everything for us, certainly, you know, the last few games have really ramped up. You know, we had Glasgow away, Ospreys at home, Connacht away. The intensity is right there, and then it's kind of set up for us to go into Europe. And then we're straight in the deep end in the south of France and Bordeaux. So, yeah, it's gonna be very, very tough. We're performing well. There's a lot of things to work on, but the standard of competition is so high that you gotta be performing to that level that we know we're capable of. But we gotta be doing it consistently to make an impact. So.
And how much of that is player driven? You know, I mean, how much of your week in terms of preparation for that? I know the coaches will tell you what they want you to do and how they want you to implement it, but a lot of it has to come from within yourselves as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously we get a lot of direction from Les and the rest of the coaching staff, but I think the best sides out there are teams that are player led and player driven, and players setting the standards and players driving things week in, week out. And it's difficult to do all season long, really. There's a lot of rugby to be played. To an extent, whenever you get into European week, there's maybe less talk about it because it's just naturally there, because it's always just a step up and there's always an added intensity. Probably especially when you're playing at home, you know, from our point of view, Kingspan Stadium on a Friday night, playing against a big French side, big English side, it always seems to be a one-off, and we tend to put in big one-off performances. So there is an added incentive or not of an added intensity there in your training week getting up to the game.
And when you looked at the pool draw and you saw who was in your pool, I mean, do you come from the school of thought that says, oh no, look who's in our pool, or oh, that's fantastic, I can't wait to play them?
Yeah, I think there's probably two parts of you fighting it over to see who's going to come out on top, excitement or dauntingness, kind of. Is dauntingness a word?
Yeah.
Yeah, daunt.
We'll make it up here. Fear.
Yeah, but it's daunting going to the south of France. It's daunting going to Clermont, Bordeaux, these places, Exeter as well. But as you say, you know, there's a large amount of excitement going there, create a little bit of history, and just sort of just shake it up. Go there and no one expects you to win when you go to the south of France. And they don't expect you to win because, you know, traditionally it's a tough place to go, and you've got to be playing out of your skin and performing very well to get points on the road. But it's a big ask, and that's why we're in this environment, because we want to get the best out of ourselves.
And before I let you finish, I know it's a squad thing, and I don't want to be singling out individuals, but I mean, what's it like to go training every day with Charles Piatow? I've seen him on the pitch up in Kingspan Stadium. He just looks magical.
He's ridiculous, really. He's very, very talented. He's very professional. He fits in very well culturally on and off the pitch. He's a guy who just demands standards, demands a high standard of training in the gym, on the pitch, in the training, or on the training pitch as well. So he's great for us. He's settled in really well, and I think he's very popular amongst the boys. So he's certainly a talisman for us, and he's going to be a big asset for us this season.
Is he learning a lot from you?
He is, yeah. I've taught him how to sidestep and just basically physically dominate people. He learned a lot from me. He wasn't doing that last year at Wasps. He learned that when he arrived in pre-season. Despite me being injured, I taught him that.
That's Ulster's Andrew Trimble there chatting ahead of the game between Bordeaux Begley and Ulster, which takes place on Sunday. And there is a second game on Sunday. It continues the France-Ireland theme over the course of the weekend. And it's a little bit more than that, to be perfectly fair about it. Racing 92 against Munster. It's Ronan O'Gara against Munster. I thought I'd never say that in the one sentence, Gavin.
No, absolutely. And what a week it's been for Racing. That's really has quite disturbed the club. And there's been a lot of comments this week from the coaches and the president, Jackie Lorenzetti, saying that he had his old mum on the phone saying, "What's this about doping?" And having to explain that it's a scandal that really has affected them. And it was going to be very interesting. Dan Carter missed the Parisian derby, the win against Stade Français at the weekend, just resting a calf injury. But it's going to be interesting to see how he reacts to all the hoo-ha of the last week.
Is it fair to say that the build-up to this game has been completely overshadowed by, you know, the events off the pitch?
Absolutely, completely overshadowed. And it's a shame because on Monday it was the top 14 award ceremony for the 2015-2016 season, and Johan Huissen, the Racing utility back, the South African, was voted Player of the Year, and which was a wonderful honour, and he was outstanding last year when they won the top 14 title. But again, you know, the questions afterwards from the media were all about the L'Equipe's story about the cortisone injections, and it has, it's going to be dominated by, and there's going to be lots of press on Sunday, and they're going to be there to wanting to try and get words about the Dan Carter and Juan Imhoff, and so it's a shame for Racing. It's going to be very interesting to see how they cope with it and the pressure on Sunday.
Yeah, from a Munster point of view, do you give them any chance? You know, given the fact of the quality of what Racing have, but as we've been saying throughout the course of this conversation, perhaps their mind isn't 100% on the task at hand.
Yeah, but it may not be. And they've been very inconsistent this season. Against Toulon last month, they played one of the best 40 minutes I've seen from a French club in quite a while, and they blew Toulon off the park. But at other times, they've been pretty shapeless and shambolic. And they've got, when they're at on the top of the game, they've got a great back row in Nyonga, Chris Mazzoi, Wenceslas Laure. And obviously they've got Carter and Imhoff and all this talent out wide. But they just seem this season to be very similar to Stade Francais last year, when the season after they won the top 14 title, to struggling to cope with being the top dogs, if you like. But Europe represents something else to them. And there's a sense that they didn't do themselves justice against Saracen in last year's final. So I think that they are going to be fully focused. And there is a sense of sort of pulling together against all the French journalists who have been on their case, that there's an esprit de corps there, which is perhaps actually what they've needed after this slow start to the season.
Aidan, do you see any seeds of hope or anything at all from a Munster point of view? I know certainly reading the press, both here and in France during the course of the week, everybody expects Racing to win this game comfortably.
Yeah, the benefit for Munster is they actually usually go into Europe on a bad foot. Like, historically, they've kind of gone in on a bad foot. And I think getting a bit of a kick in the derriere this against Leinster was actually a good thing going into this game, because it'll create that siege mentality where they'll actually come together and they'll fight. They'll be cornered rats, essentially. And that's what Munster needs. That's where Munster thrive, I think. And Racing coming here, regardless of the shadow of all the paper, the L'Equipe articles, etc., they'll actually come fighting in that game, and that's what they need. It's actually made for a Munster victory of old, I think. It's the stage is set. The guys have their back against the wall. They'll be disappointed against how they performed. They were never going to win that Leinster game. I thought it was a bit like, you know, we'll 55 minutes and then we'll start cracking, kind of old, the way, you know, Ireland used to be 20 years ago, you know, against New Zealand, etc. And or still are today, actually. But that kind of mentality is how Munster were last week. And I think this is actually how they need to approach this game. Racing, unbelievably strong, but it's another banana skin. It's very like the Toulouse game in Connacht for me. I think Munster, have an opportunity because of all that stuff. but also because particularly where they're coming from, having lost last weekend.
Yeah, but have they got the players? You know, I mean, they may have the mentality of old. That's that, you know, and they go into this as massive underdogs match in Paris against a cash-rich French team. Again, you're talking about inside tracks and whatever. I mean, Rog knows everybody here backwards. He knows everything. He knows what fellas have for their breakfast, you know?
The big one for me, and Gavin said it, is like Lauren Zeddy, for example, this has been his dream. He's backed this. He's had the cash to basically give it runway to go, we're going to win this by hook or by crook. We're going to get there by hook or by crook. I'm going to buy everybody in. We're going to make this happen. And I think that's part of the esprit de corps as well. You have O'Gara. This is more than beating Munster for O'Gara. I think, you know, he felt he probably had to go abroad to actually prove himself as well, certainly as a coach, because he probably wouldn't have got a coaching job here, which is just a sad indictment of how the system is. But he's had to go away. So there's so much more there. There's him in the ears of the players. There's Lorenzetti in the ear of the players. There's the players themselves. There's probably kind of them wanting to overshadow the whole scandal in the paper, etc., themselves, which is going to be that. It's actually more that I think than actually the players on the pitch on the day, because I think Munster probably win if it was purely that. But it's the stuff, it's the mentality behind it on the day that's going to make Racing.
Okay, before we let you go, Gavin, I know you're under pressure time wise, but what's your plan for the weekend? Who are you off to spy on?
Oh, I'm going to be at Racing Munster. Really looking forward to that. It's going to be Racing's one of those grounds. It's not a particularly atmospheric ground, and it's going to be interesting. I'm sure the Munster are going to bring over a lot of supporters, and make it almost a home from home. So it's going to be. I think that will be a factor too. But I think Racing Munster for me is going to be the pick of the matches, and I can't wait for it.
And ahead of the game, let's hear the thoughts of the Munster director of rugby, Razzie Erasmus.
I know about the history, I know about the winning feeling and what they do for the support and Ireland overall, so there's a massive responsibility. And look, we've got a great challenge with the pool we're in, so I know what we're up against, but we're geared for that.
And when you look at the other teams that are in that pool, I mean, it really does help focus your mind, not that it doesn't need focusing.
Yeah, I think when you look at the pools, every team goes and see which should be the easier games, and then you quickly realise you're the easy game for the other guys in the pool. So that might be the perception, and I think that's what our challenge is, to change that by the way we're performing on the field, that we aren't seen as the easy team to play against in the pool. So certainly we're up against it when you look at that, but yeah, I mean, if you're not focused when you're in a pool like that, then there's troubles.
You will have heard an awful lot, I'm sure, people talk about ex-Munster players, Ronan O'Gara, been there for quite a long period of time, what his long association with Munster, and then you find that he's, even though his heart is in Munster, his now coaching head is on the other side of the fence when you play your first game against Racing Metro.
Yeah, I played against him a lot, you know, and obviously I've seen what they've done when he was almost in charge as a general there at 10 when Munster were doing really great. So, you know, they will be well coached. We see what they did last year, how well they played. And I don't know if it's good or bad for us that he's on that side. I think obviously it's bad because he's got such a rugby brain, and then he's slotting in well, and he would know Munster really well, you know. So we'll be up against it, and it will be a good challenge for our boys to show that there's new young heroes coming through who can fill the boots of those guys that done it in the past.
Do you see this as a chance for the younger players like that to write their own history, you know, given the fact that, yes, Munster have had a great past, but it's now the opportunity to look forward and move forward?
You know, it's actually reality, you know. Everybody sees it as opportunities, but it's reality, you know. Paul O'Connell was once 18, and Ronan O'Gara was once 18, 19 years old, so, and they grew into becoming legends and heroes, and then, you know, guys that people look up to. So it's opportunities, and there's never a better opportunity to do it against the best in the world to stake your claim out there, and we'll be playing against the best in the world. So spot on there, you know. If we don't see it that way, we're looking past reality.
It does look as if those games are a different intensity, doesn't it? You know, I mean, they're different from the league games that are played week in, week out.
It is. You know, I will be lying. It's almost like you're going up from, you know, provincial rugby to test match rugby. There's not a lot of weaknesses in there where you play provincial or club rugby, maybe at lower levels or leagues. There's weaknesses in the opposition, and here a prop can tackle as well as a centre or flankers as far as a winger, you know. So those are the challenges which teams with maybe average players somewhere in the competition, they will find out very quickly that they will have to make the step up there.
All right, listen, thanks for joining us in Paris, Gavin. We'll chat to you again.
Cheers, Michael. Thanks, Hayden.
All the best, yeah. Take it easy, man. That's it from the Breakdown for this week. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter at BreakdownRTE. From producer Andrew O'Connor and myself, Michael Corcoran, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.